Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back, folks. 2021 was an interesting year on the national level. And as we head into the midterms election season, I suspect it's going to grow even more interesting as we see the tug-of-war that goes on between the two parties, the Republicans and the Democrats. And here to talk to us about it is Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, happy new year to you and welcome.
Well, thank you. Happy new year to you and everyone listening to us.
Ron, no shortage of interesting stories in 2021. Where would you put as the top stories there?
Well, I think in terms of the national scene, the top story has to be the continuation of the coronavirus and the pandemic, you know, implications on society and how people live and our economy and, of course, on our health. That's a top story. From a foreign policy standpoint, the Afghanistan pullout and how that was bungled, I think, was the top foreign policy story. And in terms of local politics, you know, we had a city election in New Orleans where the mayor was reelected. A number of members of the city council were not. And so there's some changes coming there. So there were a lot of significant stories in 2021, but I do think the pandemic sort of led the way.
Biden's job approval rating it seems as though the average is dropping a couple of points again. It's almost every week or every other week he makes a statement that I don't know about you, but I find to be very confusing over the holidays, where he said that there's no federal, you know, solution to COVID, which is completely contrary to what he campaigned on.
Well, I think one of the problems that President Biden has had in his first year in office has been just communicating about the pandemic, and it's been sloppy, it's been confusing, it's been difficult to understand. Now, you know, in his defense, the situation has been confusing and difficult to understand.
Absolutely.
And any president would have had a rough time dealing with it. But I get the feeling that the Biden administration, you know, they expected the rise in vaccinations to be swift, and that was going to handle the problem, and everything would be okay, and that they just weren't prepared for a prolonged pandemic. And a resurgence in infections and across the country, and they're having trouble dealing with it, and that's where we are. And his handling of the pandemic was one of his strong suits in the early days of his administration, at least according to public opinion. While the public was giving him job ratings in the 50s. They were giving his rating of the handling the pandemic in the 60s. Now they're all in the 40s. So that's been a big problem for the administration.
What I find interesting is that he campaigned on bringing stability and order and structure, you know, coming from the inside, having served and understanding how government operates, as opposed to the opposite end of the spectrum, someone who came in from the outside. But it's hard not to characterize this administration as being very chaotic here over at least the last 6 months, for sure.
Well, that is an irony. You know, the Trump administration was marked by chaos, and a lot of that chaos came from Donald Trump's management style and his communication style, where he was sort of, you know, at any given moment was capable of saying and doing anything and sort of turning the tables on everything. But in the case of Biden, it's not so much that than it is, they're fixated on policies in Congress right now that frankly most Americans don't really care that much about. And the problems that Americans do care about, with the pandemic on top of the list, and also border and immigration issues, and the economic issues, supply chain issues, inflation, are issues that the administration doesn't seem to have a clear-cut course of action on. And I think that's making the administration look more chaotic than it needs to be. And it's really they're sort of caught in policy traps. And again, I think the problems turned out to be worse than they were expecting, and they weren't well prepared to deal with this, whether it's from a policy standpoint or from a standpoint of keeping the public informed and communicating. And I think that's been one of the failures of the administration so far.
So when we think about going into 2022, and obviously midterm election season is going to start kicking in. Obviously, a lot of unresolved issues in 2021, Build Back Better, the voting rights bill. It seems as though they are developing strategies to try and bring these back up early onset. Your thoughts?
Well, that's true, and it's because they're focused so much time and attention and put so much political capital in these issues, they feel like they have to do something about them. Again, the irony is the political implications of them doing something about it may not necessarily help them that much, but I do think that they have painted themselves in the corner on these issues. And not to say that some of the issues they're dealing with aren't important. Of course they are. But they're not the only issues out there. And they're not always the issues the American people are most concerned with right now.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Obviously, there's a number of stories being reported that Chuck Schumer is going to try and use the anniversary of January 6th to, create some momentum for the purposes of the voting rights bill. Accusing Republicans of changing laws at the state level to make it harder to vote or otherwise. And I find it all very kind of interesting because when you dig down into the details of these issues, a lot of these states, Delaware is one, has some of the most restrictive voting rules, that's been under complete Democrat control forever. And, we make these statements as though, these are things that are completely out of the ordinary that we're instituting in some of these other states.
When you hear talk about, election law changes, as we've been hearing, whether they're changes that Republicans have pushed in the state level or the Democrats are pushing in Congress, we have to always separate the wheat from the chaff here. And the wheat is that there are legitimate issues, legitimate concerns, legitimate problems, many of them are very technical in nature, involving the election system that requires some common sense in people getting together and resolving. And these issues are not and should not be partisan, and they're not ideological. But then you have this whole other layer that's partisan, that's sound bites, that's meant to skewer the other side without fixing the election process. And both sides have been guilty of that. And so, again, we can't resolve an issue because the politics is just overclouded the substance of what the issues involve.
Yeah, and the gauntlet's been thrown down by Schumer, saying that if the Republicans don't vote on this voting rights bill, that they intend to blow up the filibuster. Now, this is the same guy that took advantage of the filibuster, you know, not too many years ago and spoke in favor of it and saying, you know, if you can't get 60 votes for a judicial candidate, maybe you just need to bring a different, you got the wrong candidate. You need to bring somebody else.
Well, you know, I think what's happening in the country, when you look at the big picture, is that neither side has a governing majority. Neither side can do whatever they want. And the American people have made it that way because they don't really trust or particularly like either side that much. So they figure, well, if neither side can do much and they can check one another, it's going to save us from disaster. So as a result of that, both political parties are now trying to move away from the rules that have applied for a long time. And I'm not saying the rules are right. I'm just saying their solutions are now not just arguing and persuading and convincing people to be on their side, but, you know, for instance, presidential use of executive orders. We saw President Obama doing that to a great degree. President Trump did it. Now President Biden. And essentially what that is most of that is just getting around the U.S. Constitution and getting around the separation of powers. And so now we're in a situation in Congress where because neither side has a governing majority, there's a stalemate, there's paralysis. So they say, well, because we can't solve the fundamental problems, we're going to have to change the rules to do what we want. And of course, what Schumer and the Democrats don't understand is that if the Republicans take control back in the next few years, they're going to use those same new rules and the same process that they're now proposing to get rid of everything that the Democrats did. So it's not always just a matter of how you fix problems for the long term. So much of this is based on short-term politics. And that's what I fear, because, anything they're passing now that doesn't require the 60 votes in the Senate, if the Republicans come back and get a majority of the Senate in 2022 or 2024, which is certainly possible, then they'll repeal it and get it back to where it was before. So sometimes there's much ado about nothing, and I think we're seeing a lot of that right now.
Ron, is there irony here where the voter may have just completely frustrated the political bourgeoisie, so to speak?
Well, I think in some ways that really has happened. And voters don't have a whole lot of confidence in the system. They don't have a whole lot of confidence in the people running Congress. I mean, we've been looking at job ratings for both Democratic and Republican leaders for years, and they're always awful. I mean, really bad. And whether it was Paul Ryan, who was Speaker of the House, or John Boehner, or Nancy Pelosi, or, a Democrat or a Republican Senate majority leader, you know, all of the ratings were bad. And I just think the American people have not been happy with the way this process works. They're not happy. So they're frustrating it, and they're saying, hey, we have no reason to do anything but but checkmate the other side. I think that's where American politics has gone.
Absolutely. All right, we got to get to a break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We're visiting with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. We are back. We're visiting with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, there's a interesting conversations and, I guess, debate going on within the Democratic Party at the present time. There's an expectation that Nancy Pelosi will step down at the end of this congressional session. It seems as though there are many that are pushing the candidacy of Representative Hakeem Jeffries as the favorite to become the new leader. However, the progressives are arguing that this party needs to have more decentralized leadership, which I find kind of interesting because that kind of leads to a plurality within the party. And neither of these parties seem to be able to historically manage that very well, right?
That's right. And, you know, one of the things that Nancy Pelosi has been good at is that she had centralized leadership and was able to keep control of the process for the most part. Now, the reason why in the House you want centralized leadership is because you don't trust the process without it. You know, you don't trust where the process could go without having a strong hand at the top. And that's been her philosophy. There's been a lot of Democrats, particularly those on the progressive left, who haven't agreed with that. And have opposed it, but they have basically fallen in line with her on it. But if she does leave the speakership and the Democrats have a speaker who will accept that idea of decentralization, it's going to be hard for that speaker to do the job because houses of representatives are forums. And the Senate is a club, and forums are very difficult to manage, and because there's so many people, so many different elements, different philosophies, different geographic interests, that that it takes a strong speaker to manage it, and if you run for speaker on the platform that you're not going to be a strong speaker, and you're going to let the committee chairs run the show, and you're going to let the caucuses run the show. And of course, you know, in the old days when Sam Rayburn was Speaker of the House, he didn't have all these caucuses, you know. Right. But now you've got a caucus for everything, and everybody's caucus think they should be running the show. So if they do that, it's going to be hard for them to get anything much done.
Yeah, it's interesting. Pelosi's mantra has always been our diversity is our strength and unity is our power. And I think that speaks volumes there. What's also kind of interesting is the progressives' perspective of the Democratic Party. You and I talked about this before early on in the year when AOC said that in no other country would Joe Manchin and AOC be in the same party. And I guess that kind of highlights the challenge, right?
Well, it does, but the left has now gotten the Joe Manchins down to very few. And right. and the progressive left has a lot more voting power within the Democratic caucus than the what you'd call centrist or members. But I do think that, the problem the progressive left has, and it's the same thing that we saw with the Tea Party movement in the Republican Party some years ago, is that the progressive left just doesn't have enough votes to govern. They don't have enough votes to pass legislation on their own. They need centrist Democrats and in some cases Republicans to join coalitions, and they're doing everything they can to push centrist Democrats away and to push Republicans away. Just like a lot of the Tea Party Republicans were doing, you know, 7-8 years ago. So so we see similar cycles moving, you know, in each turn here, and it doesn't seem like anybody's learning from the past very well.
Yeah, it just seems to me, I mean, one of the things that AOC and a number of the others have done is to go into districts and actually beat moderates that who would otherwise probably easily win. But I got to imagine that's not a great long-term strategy, because it seems to me, and you have your finger on this pulse more than I do, that it's created a sense of distrust within the party. You have a lot of people like kind of looking over their shoulder, right?
No, when people start purging their own party, that's usually a sign of a problem. And, you know, even President Franklin Roosevelt, who was one of the most politically skillful presidents we've ever had, and arguably the most skillful, when he became frustrated and went out trying to purge anti-New Deal Democrats from elected office and Democratic primaries, he didn't do very well with that. And that was the case of a very popular president who was very, very skillful. So it doesn't make sense for either side to do that. I had a column in the Picayune yesterday about rhinos and dinos, that people, you know, a lot of Republicans don't like what they call Republicans in name only, and a lot of Democrats don't like what they call Democrats in name only. The problem is they can't win elections in swing states and swing districts or close elections without the dinos voting Democratic and the rhinos voting Republicans. So it makes no sense for either party to be out there purging their own people. You know, take Joe Manchin, for example. He voted for the $1.9 trillion pandemic relief bill that the Biden administration had and just barely passed. He voted for the infrastructure bill. He voted for a lot of other things to make Chuck Schumer majority leader of the Senate, for example, that they would not have had there been a Republican in his district. So this idea of an extreme left-wing or right-wing fringe wanting to purge centrist out of their party, it's never made sense, and it doesn't make sense now.
In the previous hours, talking to Clancy, and he referred to, you know, the Republican Party issues and that it's acting more like a cult than a party. In many respects, the same could be said about Democrats, because, you know, when you talk about rhinos and dinos, it seems as though unless you have a 100% blood oath to every party issue, you're a rhino or a dino.
That's exactly right. And you know, this is nothing new. We've seen this emerge over time and over the years, but it's really gotten worse now. And you know, the Democrats are not going to hold their majorities if the people they call dinos, you know, Democrats in name only, who tend to be independent-minded and centrist Democrats, if they don't stick within that Biden coalition, they're going to have a terrible year next year. And the same thing that goes for Republicans. If they run away their rhinos and run away independent-minded people who vote Republican, then they're going to lose a golden opportunity to pick up a lot of seats. Of course, the Republicans have one thing going for them, and that is, you know, is Joe Biden and the Democrats. They can run against them and so hold a lot of their rhinos, even though they're not welcoming them into the party. But I think that's a big issue. And when somebody in a political party starts attacking somebody else in their party as a rhino or a dino, they're making a big mistake, and they need to give that second thought.
You know, I'm looking at a text that I received here, and it's kind of interesting because I'm not sure people really understand the internal machinations of Congress. The text simply says, why can't we just get rid of the parties?
Well, I would actually support that. But,
you and me both.
I'd be on the front lines of that one. Because I actually think that the political party system, even though it has its good purposes to stabilize politics I think it's become perverted. I don't think it's working anymore. But the parties aren't required. They're not required.
Let us take a break. We're going to have to reconnect with you. We're having a little difficulty. You're breaking up really bad. All right, we're going to go to a break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We're visiting with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. We are back. We're visiting with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, before we get to your most recent publication, I wanted to ask you, what do you think is going to be the most interesting thing that's going to happen here in 2022 as it relates to this political tug of war? There are a lot of unanswered questions coming out of 2021, obviously, and a lot of unresolved issues that we've already talked about earlier in this show. What are you most concerned about?
Well, I think racial division in this country is increasingly sharp and troublesome, and how that's being used within the political process is something that I think we all should be concerned about, whether we're on the left or the right or the middle. And that's one thing. The other thing is, I know you've used the phrase, people campaign in poetry and govern in prose. But what's happening now is people are now governing in sound bites, and not real substantive action is being taken. And the inability of the parties to sit down and to say, okay, we disagree with a lot of things, and that's fine. That's the way it should be. But let's try to get those things that we agree on, and let's pass that and get that done. I mean, I know it sounds very simple, but if you go say that in Capitol Hill, people will laugh you out of the office. Because they say, well, nothing's going to happen because no side is going to do what the other side wants, whether what the other side wants is something they like or not. And that's when it becomes really irrational. And I wish voters would sort of pin the candidates to the wall on things like that and try to make sure the candidates are not going to play that game and going to try to break out of that game.
I guess I, like you, I'm not sure that I see the ingredients of this, and I'll call it a zero-sum game. It's like we're all in. Everything is shock and awe, right? And I just don't see those ingredients diminishing in the near future.
No, I don't think there will be. In fact, arguably, it'll get worse because...
It's hard to believe that it can get worse.
Well, we said that a few years ago,
and it's
getting worse. But especially if the Republicans do take control of both houses of Congress, which is possible. I mean, it looks likely they'll take control of the House, and it's possible they can take control of the Senate. And if that happens, then all these shoes will be on different feet. The majority, the minority, the filibuster. Who's controlling this centralized power. And so the other side, the majority will sort of use the same tactics that were used against them, and the minority will use the same tactics that were used against them. And of course, it just keeps making things worse. And the other problem is reapportionment will have something to do with this. But as Congress loses members who are centrist, it becomes a bigger and bigger problem, because you have less people who want to make deals and who want to reach compromises and who want to get things done. And all of the forces of politics are moving towards that, whether it's redistricting in the House, whether it's the money that's spent in these big Senate elections, are all sort of pushing candidates to the hard right and the hard left. And that's exactly what the American people don't want. And it's exactly what a lot of members of Congress say they think is screwing up the process, but it's not stopping. You know, the momentum continues to be there.
I kind of chuckle when I see both parties putting out information that reads as follows: we need to abolish gerrymandering, and the like. But that's how they get to the representative base that they have, right? I mean, that's part of the
process. Well, of course. I mean,
it's almost as if why are we BSing the public, you know, like this? And there's no accountability. I mean, it's like you have population shifts, you have to account for it. I mean, the governor in this state says that the population breakdown warrants a second minority district. Well, the only way you get there is to gerrymander it, right? But yet you have Democrats saying we need to abolish gerrymandering. What? Excuse me? I don't understand.
Well, you know, you get to the point where just about everything is gerrymandering, because everything has some kind of a political goal. And so you're right, the hypocrisy is just incredible. Both sides have gerrymandered like crazy. They gerrymander whenever they can. And the one thing that can control partisan gerrymandering is incumbency gerrymandering, where the parties say, well, okay, we're going to protect our incumbents. So we're going to let you guys protect your people, and in return, you protect our incumbents, and we try to have us, you know, keep the status quo. But the whole idea of ending gerrymandering, I just don't know how that can ever be done, because it's people and partisans who are making these decisions, and the law in some cases requires gerrymandering. So it's an issue that, frankly, that people and I find the news media messes up a lot, because they never explain what it is. Just like the current issue about the so-called Voting Rights Act. It's not even a Voting Rights Act. There's two separate bills, but we're so caught up now in the slogans and the labels and the buzzwords and the sound bites that nobody ever explains what's in these bills. You know, most people don't know what's in the bills that were passed over the last few years, you know, that spent all this money. And in terms of these election law bills, I had an opportunity to go through them quite a bit in the last couple of weeks, and wanted to write a column on it. And it covered so much. Some of it is so confusing. Some of it's so difficult to figure out. It's hard to even collect your thoughts and write about it, you know. So that kind of thing is a problem for the country, because how can people elect representatives if the representatives can't even explain to them what they're doing?
And then you added the overlay of virtue signaling. I mean, I remember when they moved the All-Star game from Georgia to Colorado. I went and pulled the Colorado election code. It was more restrictive than Georgia in probably half of the provisions. It's like, are you guys even reading these laws?
I mean, well, that's the thing. It's all about what the slogan is and what the soundbite is, and everybody believes that. Nobody actually looks at the law, looks at the bills. And because these things are doing things that these laws are doing things that, that aren't being explained. And, you know, one of the things I find in conducting focus groups with average people is one thing that average people want is they want politicians, government officials, companies, corporations, advertisers. They want people to explain things. They want information. There's a tremendous hunger for information. Now, when I say hunger for information, that doesn't mean everybody wants a 30-page paper. But they do want things explained, and they do want to figure out what's going on here. And the leadership not doing it's true on both sides.
Well, it's there's nothing more true on the issue than the filibuster. And that has been a hallmark of one of the most, what has been hailed as one of the most deliberative bodies in the world, right?
Right.
And yet we, right. And yet we talk about that in a very cavalier way, where it's an anomaly where we actually protect the minority in that fashion. And the realities are, we should be bragging about it. But yet we want to say that it's something bad, nasty, dirty, because it compels compromise. They don't want it.
Well, that's right. And of course, if you did get rid of the filibuster, look, there are legitimate arguments to get rid of the filibuster. But if you did do it, then if the other side gets in the control of the Senate and they have a 51-52 seat majority, then they're going to just repeal everything the other side's 51-52 vote majority did. So so it's going to add an additional element of instability.
No doubt. And, you know, it just gets crazier by the day. Ron Fauché, always enjoy the conversation with you. Thank you so much. Happy New Year to you again. And look forward to speaking with you in the very near future.
Thank you.
All righty. That's Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Scoot's up next. We'll visit with him when we return. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.